This week,
close to zero.
The water bomber crew flies over the Atlantic.
And we're on the road again.
And head on into trouble.
Hey, there's an inch of ice on your bunk.
Yeah.
And ice is killing us.
And the McBryans mount a mission to save a piece of Joe's past.
Don't let her back. We'll lose her.
Justin Simley guides a CL-215 water bomber down toward the Keflavik Airport in Iceland.
Then you can start slowing it to 110 there, Roland.
The end of today's leg from Greenland marks the halfway point for Buffalo's two planes on their marathon mission to Turkey.
There's lots of stress, lots of pressure. I don't think that you come down from that until the job is done, because if you're not on your game, disaster can happen.
On the glide path, everything visual, stand by, full flat.
We got here.
Yeah.
It's good.
So we made it.
Yeah, Iceland. It's good. It's a good long day. Weather was absolutely perfect. For once, we actually got something accomplished.
But tomorrow, mechanic Corey Dodd and crew will face the biggest challenge of the trip. They'll head all the way to Scotland over open ocean. The next morning, the weather takes a turn. Heavy winds are battering the airport.
Apparently we're going to make an attempt at this, so we'll warm these things up. We've got like 12 hours ahead of us.
Justin and fellow captain Roland Marion check conditions.
That's the only little bit of concern.
Weather's good at the other end. Not so great here. From Iceland to Scotland is the longest leg over water, so again, we've got some pretty good headwinds, so we're going to be over the ocean for quite a while.
That means they'll have just enough fuel to make the crossing, if nothing goes wrong.
Alpha Yankee November Tower. Ground wind is now 160 at 15 up to 27 knots. Clear to destination base with fire direct.
Ready to go?
Ready.
60 knots, my pole.
V1.
Check.
V2.
Charlie Foxtrot, Yankee November,
Outside
Flight.
Buzzer,
right. Here.
This leg will be the most dangerous of the journey, by far. They're heading from southwestern Iceland, 1,300 kilometers across open water, to Prestwick Airport in Scotland, with nowhere to land in between. Right on their tail, Nigel Clark and Blair Cutton are flying the second water bomber.
Good right, and it's good left. Positive ring, you're up.
Roger.
Nigel and Blair are wearing their bulky survival suits. Once they reach the ocean, the suits are all that will keep them alive if they have to ditch into the sub-zero waters.
These suits, I hope they don't catch on anything here.
But in the other plane, the crew is flying without suits.
We weren't doing it to be macho or anything. It's just the darn things are really uncomfortable, right?
And we all came to the conclusion that
If something happens that bad that we don't have enough time to get the suits on, we're pretty much screwed.
And we're on the road again.
Yeah.
Seems like only yesterday.
That was only yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, we're getting a stronger headwind.
Yeah, we are.
Pushing against the headwind slows them down, using up more fuel. The crews will need every drop to make it to dry land.
Little ice.
Getting it? Yeah, just a tad, okay.
And there's a much bigger problem waiting, dead ahead.
It'll be a lot different time back then, 1964.
In Yellowknife, Mikey and Joe McBrien are on the hunt for a piece of Joe's past.
How was this airplane stacked against other airplanes?
That sent the benchmark around town as to what airplanes could haul and what the job could do it.
How much was it? Like, we're talking 5,000 pounds?
You're talking six plus.
Holy shit.
A long-forgotten wreck of the first plane Joe ever flew, a Lockheed Model 10A.
Famous aviator Amelia Earhart.
The Model 10 was famous as the plane that Amelia Earhart was flying when she disappeared. One of only 149 ever built in the 1930s and early 40s. Today, about 20 survived, mostly in museums, and just three are still flying.
That's me there, and that's Jimmy. And we land out on the ice in the spring, and of course they come out to us with boats.
This Lockheed 10A was where Joe got his start, hauling fish on Great Slave Lake.
Pretty young, impressionable, and those, it's like your first date. Those things always stick with you.
The plane belonged to one of Joe's first mentors, legendary Northern pilot Merlin Carter.
I memorized Merlin's moves and the moves of the airplane. So that's really how I learned to fly. I recognized the dance from the moves.
But 40 years ago, Merlin crashed the 10A in the wilderness, 100 kilometers outside of Yellowknife.
The surface the airplane landed on was really soft, which caused the airplane to flip over. The drum fuel that he was hauling leaked out, ignited, and actually destroyed the center section of the fuselage.
Merlin survived and only passed away a few years ago. But the remains of his legendary plane have never been recovered. Now, the McBrien's intend to do something about it.
It's Saturday, it's a nice day out, we got some free time, so we're going to use the Traveler to go out and see if we can find the Lockheed.
Oh, hey, we're on our way.
According to the serial number, Merlin's Lockheed was the fifth one off the assembly line, making it the oldest known Model 10.
Hey, we're ready to back you down.
The Carter family wants to retrieve the distinctive double fin tailpiece and use it to build a memorial.
They're quite interested in seeing if I can bring it in and put up a memento to their dad. And I'm interested in doing that.
We'd like to right hand turn and line up all the
Joe and Mikey have been waiting all winter for the snow to melt so they can take their Beechcraft Baron to scout the location.
We had coordinates from the military, various other Buffalo employees, and even the Carter family themselves. All the coordinates didn't line up. We have to go out in an airplane and check it out.
Set that computer up I gave you. And we'll just go until it reads that heading.
See, the lakes have a lot of water now. It's high water. All the snow is melted.
It's 2 feet of water.
The major disadvantage with the time we've picked, which is the springtime, is the water. Merlin landed this airplane on a dry lake bed, but he did it in the fall. So in the spring, that dry lake bed could actually be a lake.
And with thousands of lakes below, this piece of Joe's past could be impossible to find. Out over the Atlantic Ocean, Justin and Corey have run into a big problem.
The speed is worrying me, Rolling.
We got airborne and we climbed up. And instantly packed on a shitload of ice.
The ice is slowing the plane to a crawl.
Like, way too much for the comfort zone.
Just takes feeling
soft because of the drag.
It is not designed to fly in ice. It's got all kinds of things that collect ice at just a phenomenal catch rate.
See your pedal cover, your wing fins,
yep.
Your sponson. See, there's an inch of ice on your sponson.
Yeah, well, same on your wiper.
That's a real bitch in the ice, I'll say that.
With the headwind, the fuel supply was already stretched to the limit. Now the ice is slowing the plane down so much that the crew could run out of gas before making land.
The problem is, as the airplane slows down, it gets less responsive. The ailerons and the elevator and the rudder, they work less. You got to pull a little more power to keep maintaining airspeed. More power you pull, more fuel we're burning. It's like, holy, this is not good.
Quite a bit on now.
I had never had that much ice on a CL-215 before in my life. That was something else.
The ice is killing us.
And there's nothing below them but the North Atlantic.
It's only like -3, you know.
Halfway between Iceland and Scotland, and nowhere near dry land, the water bomber crew is stuck in dense cloud. The moisture from the clouds is coating the plane with a thick layer of ice.
Look at how much surface area that is. It's that tail and all the shit on it.
As you build ice up on the wings, you get drag. The aft section of the airplane, it slowly drops back into the airflow, which is terrible because we're basically dragging our asses through the air.
I don't want to get this ice off us. It's killing us here for Godspeed.
If they can't escape the icing, they won't have enough fuel to make it to Scotland or anywhere else.
We were down to some deathly slow ground speeds. Things were getting pretty serious. If we couldn't get out of that ice, we would have been up shit creek.
In the second plane, pilots Nigel and Blair are facing the same problem.
All over the place here. Yeah, definitely picking up ice.
And the conditions are only getting worse.
You just gotta kind of just hold on and hope that nothing takes a turn for the worse, like the engine stop. Because if the engine quits at that point, you're dead.
Temperature's going down, -4 now. She hit us again there. Quite a bit on now.
The ice is so bad, the pilots can't even see.
Yeah, it's not coming up.
Justin has to make a move now.
The normal way out of icing is to descend.
Last clearance was for 9,000, correct?
But that's not an option today. There's more cloud and icing conditions below.
-2 degrees at 9,000. That's supposed to be an inversion, so I'm going to climb up and see what's there.
A temperature inversion is a layer of warmer air at a higher altitude.
It's going to be hard, because I think the props will have a little ice on them, too.
Justin's gambling that if he can climb another 2,000 feet, he can escape the clouds and melt off the ice. If the reported inversion isn't there, the climb will waste more of their precious fuel.
Charlie Foxtrot Alpha Yankee November, clear flight level 110.
So we're on our way to 11,000. If I can't get into clear at 11, I'm just going to come back down to 7, but 9 is not working out. Climb RPM, please.
The second 215 follows.
1,000 to go. Speed's good, heading's good. And hopefully we get on top of the ship. Okay, bearing 142, right turn 122, leveling 11,000.
142.
Alright, we're out of it.
What's next? What do I learn on the next leg?
We miraculously broke out of the cloud, and then into the clear blue sky we went.
Well, there goes it. That doesn't take much, Joe.
The warm air melts off the ice, and the planes have escaped the clouds that caused the problem.
We got out of the ice, and then you can feel the tail just start to come up as the sun hit it.
Oh, well, there goes, Corey. Look.
Piece of shit ice. Are you making out now, Nigel? You guys out of it?
Yeah, I think so.
But the crews paid a heavy price to escape the icing.
We were feeling quite relieved, but at the same time, we had burned a lot of fuel, and the headwind was still existent, so we were watching our fuel pretty carefully.
Right above the left-hand wing. The one I just
perfect. Runway 20, look at.
In the sky outside of Yellowknife, Joe and Mikey are searching for any sign of the long-lost plane.
It should be right in here. See it there, Mike? No one right there? Straight off the end of the nav lake?
Yeah, that's it.
It's not there.
They think they've found the right lake, but there's no sign of the 10A.
Right off the top, we didn't find it. And I was thinking that we were done. This might be at the bottom of the lake.
It would have been right under the wings of it. The north side of the lake. It was toward the north shore. The whole thing was sticking out. The lake was dried up. That doesn't look like a lake that dries up and turns yellow. What we have to do is put the water down top. You know, I can come back in a better day. Tell the boys I'll be back in Yellowknife in about 20 minutes.
I was pretty down. You know, all the lakes again started looking similar. The coordinates that we got from the Carter family weren't correct. I really got a lot of feeling that we were wasting our time.
But just as they head for home, something catches Joe's eye.
In fact, there's something on the shore down there, sign in silver. Seen it. See that silver thing on the north shore? There's something silver there. You see up on that shoreline?
Below
the trees.
Oh, there she is, right there, perfect. Yeah, I see her right there on the shore.
Look, you're sinking.
It was, you know, awesome. All the hard work and all the time, effort spent on it, we actually did see it, and it does exist. It really was like a weight lifted off my shoulders.
I wonder if I could see that as, oh, Christ, it's so good for the last 20 years. The weight of it going into the muskeg. Okay, 1706-6210.
With the actual coordinates locked, Joe heads back to the hangar.
It's 75 miles from Yellowknife, actually 35 nautical miles.
But Mikey's got a whole new problem.
Got a quad in here?
Mikey had planned to drive in on an ATV to haul out the tail.
Finding the Lockheed 10A was the easy part. The hard part is now getting it out. We found her. It's in a pretty bad spot. Definitely probably not a quadding spot.
What's up, Joe? Are you going to be able to get that thing over now?
Not right now. Too much water.
Right now, what really changes is the fact that, you know, we've gone from a quadding challenge to an aquatic challenge. This thing is now submerged.
And the McBrien's dreams of rescuing the lost plane could be sunk for good. British Isles, the water bomber crews have lost the headwind that was slowing them down, and they're closing in on the end of their Atlantic crossing.
This is cool.
Not a lot of trees, eh?
But a little patch of trees, they're very barren. Take some picture, however.
Without the wind, fuel has held out, but the sight of solid ground is still very welcome.
The minute you see land, psychologically, it's almost like, well, we made it. That's it. We're safe. I mean, you're not stuck in the ocean.
The Loch Ness Monster. I wonder what
where is he hanging over?
I wonder which one he's in. Bet you it's this one right below it.
He's in a lake, though, isn't he?
I see him. Oh, yeah, I guess he has to be in a lake.
Today's landing marks the end of a journey along a very important historical route.
Prestwick is where we're headed.
Prestwick.
During World War II, Scotland's Prestwick Airport was the end of the North Atlantic ferry route. American planes, like Buffalo's own DC-3s, would follow this same path. Those war-bound aircraft would stop at Prestwick and be dispatched to aid in the fight.
I remember specifically on several different occasions thinking, holy shit, we're not the first ones to do this. You're following in the footsteps of the people that were ferrying the airplanes over there to defeat the Nazis. And what a trip.
Buffalo has officially crossed the Atlantic Ocean.
195.
A few minutes later, the second crew makes their approach.
You're clear to land runway 31.
There we go.
Well done, man. That was a long-ass flight. A lot of the weariness, I think, is going to be over for everybody. Rolly and Justin did a good job today.
Well, that was a wicked day, man.
Yeah.
Good driving. I finally got some confidence in you now.
Yeah.
It took a long time.
Another North Atlantic crossing.
Yeah, is it?
Woohoo!
That one's in the books now, eh?
Yeah.
First thing tomorrow, they leave for France, with the open ocean now behind them.
Equals 55 feet. Let me just double check.
Back in Yellowknife, it's D-Day for Operation Lost Lockheed.
Okay, the wingspan's 55 feet.
Mikey's finalizing his plan to rescue the Lost Lockheed 10A from the remote swamp.
Hey, Rod. So here's Lockheed 10A. That tail is 22 feet.
And the tail is what Mikey's really after. The Model 10's double fin tail design placed a rudder directly behind each engine, giving much better stability and control. The innovation became a Lockheed trademark, and it took over twin engine planes in the 1940s, until engineers built larger single tail rudders in the 50s.
The old man just did some horse trading to get a helicopter.
To pull the massive tailpiece from the muck, Mikey will need to do some heavy lifting.
Here's where the airplane is right here. So the helicopter can come in, sling it to the road, put it right on the trailer.
So Mikey's getting a crash course in helicopter hoisting from the mission's chopper pilot.
Spin and a pull back,
mm-hmm.
and then a release and it snaps.
And he's brought along Buffalo Captain A.J. DeCoste as extra muscle.
So basically, always best course action, if you're hooking up on the ground, is coming through the front. So you're going with the big pair ring. Goes over. Locks in. It's locked. No matter how we're doing it, always give it a good pull. We don't know what the site's going to be like right now. I don't know if there's going to be a foot of water or 4 feet of water. I never want you guys to get under a load, under no circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to a place that not very many humans have been, and we're getting dropped off and left alone. Hopefully in a couple more hours we'll be, you know, showing up to town with a piece of history.
All right, you guys can pop in if you like.
Your helicopter was picked up. And on route to a point called Lockheed River.
So you know how to launch a float plane?
Out on Back Bay, Joe's prepping for his own ride to the wreck site. Joe's always looking for a reason to get his Cessna 185 float plane in the air. And he's never had a better excuse than helping salvage the 10A he flew for his mentor, Merlin Carter.
In your very, very young days, everything's very happy. And it's a period of time where you can walk on water and you're bulletproof, fireproof, waterproof. During that period of time, you're very attached to your airplane.
There's a risk. Flying his Cessna to shallow swampland, Joe will have to be absolutely sure he has enough water to land, even though he only needs a couple of feet of depth.
If we're in a country that you can guarantee it's going to stay at 2 feet, but here you could have 50 feet and then a rock, so.
But Joe is willing to take that chance.
Yeah, we're taxiing to Back Bay, North Ontega, we'll westbound 75 miles on Fort Smith track, or Fort Simpson track. Yankee, yeah, the Delta says you're from Papa Tango, 289.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're how far back are you guys?
Yeah, Jack, far back, 7 miles back,
As both McBryans zero in on the Lockheed wreckage, they have no idea what they're going to face trying to haul it out. In Prestwick, Scotland, the water bomber crew is heading to the airport for a flight that will take them to continental Europe.
Good trip.
All righty. See you.
See you in a while.
Hatching. That's good.
You too.
That's it. It's my last look at Scotland. We're out of here. Yeah, actually, this is a really nice country. I like it. That's the problem with this whole gig is we're in a hurry to get the job done, so we don't have no time to spend at every state and every stop, eh? That many people as we tacked, you know. I don't think we did anything wrong last night either. That's awesome.
Charlie Yankee November's ready for takeoff, runway 31.
Charlie Yankee November, runway 31, clear takeoff, 67 degrees.
There's 60.
They still have over 3,000 kilometers left to fly before reaching Turkey.
Course is centered, left turn, we're going to 200.
And it's far from clear sailing ahead.
Two, when we get down, we're going to try and taxi back through these weeds up to that airplane up there, okay?
In the sky outside Yellowknife, Buffalo Joe is heading for a reunion with his first love. The long-lost Lockheed 10A.
Yeah, we're trying to make my way in there so far. Get
6 minutes back.
Mikey and AJ are right behind him.
So who's getting in first?
Mike Hanley, the mission's ground crew, is on the lookout for an unmarked turnoff.
I'm wondering if this is it.
He's hauling tanks of fuel that Mikey's helicopter needs to finish the job and get home.
This is definitely it.
Mike Hanley had a very key role in the mission. He was the mobile fuel station and also the platform to bring any parts that we get out back.
Buffalo land base calling Gravesuit Helicopters. Do you copy?
In the air, the chopper zeroes in on the wreckage.
Yeah, that's it right there.
Yeah, it looks like there's water there for sure.
Joe looks for a stretch of water long enough and deep enough to land on.
Probably the same way a farmer looks at his field. I can tell by the shoreline, the weeds and ripples on it. That's deep enough for this airplane.
Yeah, I don't like this lake right here.
But he has to eyeball it perfectly. If his judgment is off, he can hit bottom or crash into a rock under the surface.
We don't know if the water is 10 feet deep or 3 feet deep or inches deep. The only reason we're at this lake is because this shallow lake bed has already claimed one airplane.
Down. But the helicopter won't be landing here.
So it looks like it's going to be too deep to shut down. So you guys can be on your own down there.
The chopper skids could sink right into the marsh, so the pilot can only hover.
I have to let you. Are you guys ready to go in?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. wet.
So he's literally putting the landing struts into the water, and then we jump out.
Like I said, guys, just be very, very sticky with hopping off the skid.
If we go out too fast, we can put the helicopter out of balance and overcorrection, and he can roll it over.
They've made it to the prize, the trademark tailpiece.
I mean, there's a big turnbuckle in here. What happens if we put the strap through here?
It looks like the only way to attach the strap is to wrap it around the tail. That means they have to free the tail from the swamp.
I don't imagine this thing is free. You guys get on the end, try and drain the water out of it.
1, 2, 3, suck! Keep it going, guys.
After 40 years, this piece of history might be staying put after all.
You know what? When he starts left, you guys get on the ends. Try and drain the water out of them.
In a swamp outside of Yellowknife, Mikey and Joe are wrestling with a piece of history.
Here, what we'll do, we'll try and flip it toward the 185 and drain it.
While the chopper leaves to refuel, the Buffalo crew has to lift the 10A tailpiece to get straps around it.
Let's see if we can lift it really quick.
Okay.
And this is where my father really came in handy, because I don't think me and AJ could have did it ourselves.
Okay, get on the end here.
Going up. 1, 2, 3, suck!
Okay.
Get the water under. She's getting lighter. Keep her up. Keep her going, guys. Get that chuck over here. Don't let her back in. We'll lose her. 1, 2, 3. Suck some work. 1, 2, 3. A little more. 1, 2, 3. A little more.
1, 2, 3. Okay. Keep her going straight over.
They're going to, we're draining out tons of water. So.
That's what damn cleansing more.
If we can get it up on its whole fuselage there.
Whoa, whoa! There it goes.
That's good, guys.
I thought we might have a lot of trouble lifting that tail out of the swamp full of water, full of mud. What did we do?
Dude, I can't believe that we just lifted it over like that. That's awesome.
By hand.
What kind of bugs have we got here?
We're in the middle of the muck, knee-high. There's bugs. Some airplanes have been sitting there for 40 years. It's underwater. There's sharp objects. Who wouldn't want to be out there?
I got to have a souvenir.
My father is what you would call a hoarder. If there's something to have, chances are that he would want to have it.
Yeah, I hate to see it all go before we land it. It's a selector there, see, a four-way selector. So we're in the cockpit. Should have brought a rake. One of the radios. Oh, I got it broke free now, yeah.
Is that a seat?
I'm going to throw up on top of the colander.
But this plane needs a lot more to Joe than just a few souvenirs.
She had a very low airspeed on takeoff. She had a very thick wing, and she could lift a load that most people wouldn't believe. I did tell you what they lifted with it. So.
As a teenage rookie, Joe hauled fish in this very aircraft alongside Merlin Carter. This is where he got his start.
Jimmy McAvoy flew it, Merlin Carter, Dallas Lay, and myself, and I'm the only one left of that group of four. The rest of the guys are all in the big air service up in the sky, where the Lord Almighty's a chief pilot up there.
There's a well-marked path here area, and the lower branches are all broken up in trees, see that? That's where something's come through here, a larger animal.
Out near the logging road, Mike Canley is on a scavenger hunt of his own.
See, there's more fresh poop right there, right? That's all poop. That's all buffalo tracks. See, there's buffalo shit. Buffalo shit right there. I can tell a poop pretty fast. I've studied a lot of poop in my time. This is Buffalo Airways ground. Go ahead, Great Sioux Helicopters.
After flying this far from home base, the helicopter's fuel reserves are almost empty.
How's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Mike Hanley.
Brent.
Nice to meet you.
Now the chopper is ready for the final and most crucial part of the job, the hoist.
You're about half an hour or so, or?
Maybe a bit longer than that.
Okay, sure.
Got a
coach?
Yep. Okay, we hear ya.
Yep.
On the way back? Okay, copy that.
Here he comes. The most dangerous part of the whole thing is the moment the tail is being lifted, because a lot of things can happen.
Grab it!
The tail can, you know, start swinging, and basically you get jagged pieces of aluminum that would cut through a human like butter.
Wait, 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 not yet! Come on!
Pilot will touch down in a nearby clearing to secure the tail in a net harness before it can make its final journey.
Okay, yeah, it looks real good from what we see down here.
But there's still one critical part of the mission left.
It's always fun going through here. Busy place.
Just getting ready to do the approach 36 miles back, and as you can hear, it's pretty busy around here. So,
after days of flying and the overwhelming challenges of the Northern Crossing, the Buffalo Water Bombers finally approach mainland Europe.
We are across the English Channel. Well, Normandy can't be too far from here then.
After landing here in Nantes, in northwest France, they'll have to make just one more stop in Croatia before delivering the planes. But Justin just got news that could ground the mission.
Still no landing clearance in Turkey.
Oh, yeah, Croatia and Spain.
That's the plan?
I don't know how far more can we go. That's the last stop.
Without clearance, they'll be stuck in Croatia. And Justin and Corey need to get home badly.
We're getting very close to our territory's fire season. You know, it starts, you know, when we left, it had started. They actually called out the airplanes early.
Justin and Corey need to fight fires back in the territories. They can't afford a delay.
I have a wind of 300 degrees. It's not been gusting.
Starting to get that cross. You can see your drift now.
Yeah.
Rep bus 5. Rep bus 10. Pull the power back. There it is. Perfect.
Holy crap, it's nice and warm here, isn't it?
On the ground, the unique firefighting planes attract a lot of attention.
The water comes in here, the scoop.
These doors are closed.
Well, I guess they fight fires and they're interested in how we fight fires, and they're asking all about the bomb system. It's nice to see guys interested in the old planes, for sure.
But Corey's only thinking of the impending delay if the crew can't get a landing permit for Turkey.
What's that?
I'm frustrated. I know what's going to happen. We're going to go to this creation, sit there for days on end, wait. It's pointless. We've got other things to do, you know?
You're on that job. You want to get the job done. Well, we're not there for a holiday. We're there to get the job done and get out.
they've known about this whole trip for months and months, and we still don't have a clearance to land in Turkey. Like, boggles my mind that we get through this stuff sometimes. Who knows, maybe more miraculously get a landing clearance tomorrow. I hope we do, personally.
If not, buffaloes come all the way across the North Atlantic, only to be shut down one stop from their goal.
Oh, I see him.
The buffalo crew is entering the final phase of the Lost Lockheed rescue. With Joe on the way home, Mikey's relocated to the trailer site.
That is so cool.
Well, here comes the tail. This is, you know, this is exciting. This is what we're waiting for. This tail hasn't flown in 40 years.
But until the helicopter drops its cargo, there are still big risks.
You had to put the tail into a net. The pilot was hoping that the net would stop the tail from spinning, which is dangerous.
The net makes it safer, but swinging around a giant piece of jagged metal, there's always danger.
All right, stand clear.
Does it have ropes off it or anything? Or, like, is there a way for us to grab it?
Yeah.
For the ground crew, there's one safety rule from the pilot that comes before all others.
Yeah, as long as we don't get physically underneath of it.
Well, that's obvious.
Right now, the pilot can't get the tail to line up with the trailer.
Kind of slid underneath the trailer, and it caught the trailer. And I'm like, oh no. You see those videos on YouTube where stuff just goes bad? And I was like, oh crap.
So despite their number one safety rule, Mike Hanley steps under the load. Legendary Lockheed tail is ready to haul home.
Woo! That's f***ing awesome, eh?
He's pretty good.
Perfect. I love it. He was able to come and pull that off, and the thing fit like a glove. There you go. Now pull.
Oldest known piece in the world. You know, this time yesterday it was a pipe dream, and then it all worked out.
Hey, thanks
coming
for
having
me, man.
Yeah? Hanley? We did so many cool things. You know, my father, AJ, Hanley, and myself, we worked together. Just felt great. Mission accomplished. Yeah, what's next? Okay, give her.
This rare aviation relic will become a memorial for pilot Merlin Carter. For Joe, it's a reminder of his mentor and of his own past.
That was a very important part of my life, that airplane. In fact, it was all my life centered around keeping that airplane serviceable and clean and ready to go, you know. You never think 40 years down the road you'd bring a part of it home.